the manner in which the salvation of the soul is to be sought. Part 1. Genesis chapter 6, verse 22. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. Concerning these words, I would observe three things. 1. What it was that God commanded Noah, to which these words refer, it was the building of an ark according to the particular direction of God against the time when the flood of waters should come, and the laying up of food for himself, his family, and the other animals, which were to be preserved in the ark. We have the particular commands which God gave him respecting this affair from the 14th verse. Make thee an ark of gopher wood, etc. 2. We may observe the special design of the work which God had enjoined upon Noah. It was to save himself and his family when the rest of the world should be drowned. See verses 17 and 18. We may observe Noah's obedience. He obeyed God. Thus did Noah. And his obedience was thorough and universal, according to all that God commanded him. So did he. He not only began, but he went through his work, which God had commanded him to undertake for his salvation from the flood. To this obedience the apostle refers to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. Doctrine. We should be willing to engage in and go through great undertakings in order to our own salvation. The building of the ark, which was enjoined upon Noah, that he and his family might be saved, was a great undertaking. The ark was a building of vast size, the length of it being 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. A cubit, till of late, was by learned men reckoned to be equal to a foot and a half of our measure. But lately some learned men of our nation have traveled into Egypt and other ancient countries and have measured some ancient buildings there, which are of several thousand years standing and of which ancient histories give us the dimensions in cubits, particularly the pyramids of Egypt, which are standing entire at this day. By measuring these and by comparing the measure in feet and the ancient accounts of their measure in cubits, a cubit is found to be almost 2 and 20 inches. Therefore, learned men more lately reckon a cubit much larger than they did formerly, so that the ark, reckoned so much larger every way, will appear to be almost double the bulk which was formerly ascribed to it. According to this computation of a cubit, it was more than 550 feet long, about 90 feet broad, and about 50 feet in height. To build such a structure, with all those apartments and divisions in it which were necessary, and in such a manner as to be fit to float upon the water for so long a time, was then a great undertaking. It took Noah, with all the workmen he employed, 120 years, or thereabouts, to build it, for so long it was that the Spirit of God strove, and the long-suffering God waited on the old world, as you may see in Genesis chapter 4, verses 3. My spirit shall I not always strive with man, yet his days shall be 120 years. All this while the ark was a preparing, as appears by 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 20, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah while the ark was a preparing. It was a long time that Noah constantly employed himself in this business. Men would esteem that undertaking very great, which should keep them constantly employed even for one half of that time. Noah must have had a great and constant care upon his mind for these 120 years in superintending this work and seeing that all was done exactly according to the directions which God had given him. Not only was Noah himself continually employed, but it required a great number of workmen to be constantly employed. During all that time, in procuring and collecting, in fitting the materials and in putting them together in due form, how great a thing was it for Noah to undertake such a work? For beside the continual care and labor, it was a work of vast expense. It is not probable that any of that wicked generation would put to a finger to help forward such a work, which doubtless they believe was merely the fruit of Noah's folly, without full wages. Noah must needs have been very rich to be able to bear the expense of such a work, and to pay so many workmen for so long a time. It would have been a very great expense for a prince, and doubtless Noah was very rich, as Abraham and Job were afterwards, but it is probable that Noah spent all his worldly substance in this work, thus manifesting his faith in the word of God, by selling all he had, as believing there would surely come a flood, which would destroy all, so that if he should keep what he had, it would be of no service to him. Herein he has set us an example, showing us how we ought to sell all for our salvation. Noah's undertaking was of great difficulty, as it exposed him to the continual reproaches of all his neighbors, for that whole 120 years. None of them believed what he told them of a flood which was about to drown the world. For a man to undertake such a vast piece of work, under notion that it should be the means of saving him when the world should be destroyed, it made him the continual laughingstock of the world. When he was about to hire workmen, doubtless all laughed at him, and we may suppose that though the workmen consented to work for wages, yet they laughed at the folly of him who employed them. When the art was begun, we may suppose that everyone that passed by and saw such a huge bulk stand there, laughed at it, calling it Noah's folly. In these days, men are with difficulty brought to do or submit to that which makes them the objects of the reproach of all their neighbors. Indeed, if while some reproach them, others stand by them and honor them, this will support them. But it is very difficult for a man to go on in a way wherein he makes himself the laughingstock of the whole world, and wherein he can find none who do not despise him. Where is the man that can stand the shock of such a trial for 20 years? But in such an undertaking as this, Noah, at the divine direction, engaged and went through it, that himself and his family might be saved from the common destruction which was shortly about to come on the world. He began and also made an end. According to all that God commanded him, so did he. Length of time did not worry him. He did not grow weary of his vast expense. He stood the shock of the derision of all his neighbors and of all the world year after year. He did not grow weary of being their laughing stock, so as to give over his enterprise, but persevered in it till the ark was finished. After this, he was at the trouble and charge of procuring stores for the maintenance of his family and all the various kinds of creatures for so long a time. Such an undertaking he engaged in and went through in order to a temporal salvation. How great an undertaking, then, should men be willing to engage in and grow through in order to their eternal salvation, a salvation from an eternal deluge, from being overwhelmed with the billows of God's wrath of which Noah's flood was but a shadow. I shall particularly handle this doctrine under the three following prepositions. 1. There is a work or business which must be undertaken and accomplished by men if they would be saved. 2. This business is a great undertaking. 3. Men should be willing to enter upon and go through this undertaking, though it be great, seeing it is for their own salvation. Proposition. There is a work or business which men must enter upon and accomplish in order to their salvation. Men have no reason to expect to be saved in idleness, or to go to heaven in a way of doing nothing. No, in order to it, there is a great work, which must be not only begun, but finished. I shall speak upon this proposition in answer to two inquiries. 1. What is this work or business which must be undertaken and accomplished in order to the salvation of men? Answer. It is the work of seeking salvation in a way of constant observance of all the duty to which God directs it in His Word. If we would be saved, we must seek salvation, for although men do not obtain heaven of themselves, they do not go thither accidentally, or without any intention or endeavors of their own. God, in His Word, has directed men to seek their salvation as they would hope to obtain it. There is a race that is set before them, which they must run. And in that race comes off victors, in order to their winning the prize. The Scriptures have told us what particular duties must be performed by us in order to our salvation. It is not sufficient that men seek their salvation only in their observance of some of these duties, but they must be observed universally. The work we have to do is not an obedience only to some, but to all the commands of God. A compliance with every institution of worship, a diligent use of all the appointed means of grace, a doing of all the duty towards God and towards man, it is not sufficient that men have some respect to all the commands of God, and that they may be said to seek their salvation in some sort of observance of all the commands, but they must be devoted to it. They must not make this a business by the by, or a thing in which they are negligent and careless, or which they do with a slack hand. But it must be their great business, being attended to as their great concern. They must not only seek, but strive. They must do what their hand findeth to do with their might, as men thoroughly engaged in their minds, and influenced and set forward by great desire and strong resolution. They must act as those that see so much of the importance of religion above all other things, that everything else must be as an occasional affair, and nothing must stand in competition with its duties. This must be the one thing they do. Philippians chapter 3, verse 13, this one thing I do. It must be the business to which they make all other affairs give place, and to which they are ready to make other things a sacrifice. They must be ready to part with pleasures and honor, estate and life, and to sell all, that they may successfully accomplish this business. It is required of every man that he not only do something in this business, but that he should devote himself to it, which implies that he should give up himself to it, all his affairs and all his temporal enjoyments. This is the import of taking up the cross, of taking Christ's yoke upon us, and of denying ourselves to follow Christ. The rich young man who came kneeling to Christ to know what he should do to be saved, Mark chapter 10, verse 17, in some sense sought salvation, but not obtained it. In some sense he kept all the commands from his youth up, but was not cordially devoted to this business. He had not made a sacrifice to it of all his enjoyments, as appeared when Christ came to try him. He would not part with his estate for him. It is not only necessary that men should seem to be very much engaged and appear as if they were devoted to their duty for a little while, but there must be a constant devotedness in a persevering way, as Noah was to the business of building the ark, going on with that great, difficult, and expensive affair till it was finished, until the flood came. Men must not only be diligent in the use of means of grace, and be anxiously engaged to escape eternal ruin till they obtain hope and comfort, but afterwards they must persevere in the duties of religion till the flood come, the flood of death. Not only must the faculties, strength, and positions of men be devoted to this work, but also their time and their lives. They must give up their whole lives to it, even to the very day when God causes the storms and floods to come. This is the work or business which men have to do in order to their salvation. Inquiry 2. Why is it needed that men should undertake to go through such a work in order to their salvation? Answer 1. Not to merit salvation, or to recommend them to the saving mercy of God. Men are not saved on the account of any work of theirs, and yet they are not saved without works. If we merely consider what it is for which, or on the account of which, men are saved, no work at all in men is necessary to their salvation. In this respect, they are saved wholly without any work of theirs. Titus 3, verses 5. Not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy he saved us, by the washing of regeneration and the renewing of the Holy Ghost. We must indeed be saved on the account of works, but not our own. It is an account of the works which Christ has done for us. Works are the fixed price of eternal life. It is fixed by an eternal, unalterable rule of righteousness. But since the fall, there is no hope of our doing these works without salvation offered freely, without money, and without price. But, 2. Though it be not needful that we do anything to merit salvation, which Christ has fully merited for all who believe in him, yet God, for wise and holy ends, has appointed that we should come to final salvation in no other way but that of good works done by us. God did not save Noah on account of the labor and expense he was at in building the ark. Noah's salvation from the flood was an instance of the free and distinguishing mercy of God. Nor did God stand in need of Noah's care, or cost, or labor, to build an ark. The same power which created the world and which brought the flood of waters upon the earth could have made the ark in an instant, without any care or cost to Noah, or any of the labor of those workmen who were employed for so long a time. Yet God was pleased to appoint that Noah should be saved in this way, so God has appointed that man should not be saved without his undertaking in doing his work which I have been speaking, and therefore we are commanded to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. There are many wise ends to be answered by the establishment of such a work as prerequisition to salvation. The glory of God requires it, for although God stands in no need of anything that man do to recommend them to his saving mercy, yet it would reflect much on the glory of God's wisdom and holiness to bestow salvation on men in such a way as tends to encourage them in sloth and wickedness, or in any other way than that which tends to promote diligence and holiness. Man was made capable of action, with many powers of both body and mind fitting him for it. He was made for business and not idleness, and the main business for which he was made was that of religion. Therefore it becomes the wisdom of God to bestow salvation and happiness on man in such a way as tends most to promote his end in this respect and to stir him up to a diligent use of his facilities and talents. It becomes the wisdom of God so to order it that things of great value and importance should not be obtained without great labor and diligence. Much human learning and great moral accomplishments are not to be obtained without care and labor. It is wisely so ordered in order to maintain in man a due sense of the value of these things which are excellent. If great things were in common easily obtained, it would have a tendency to cause men to slight and undervalue them. Men commonly despise those things which are cheap and which are obtained without difficulty. Although the work of obedience performed by men be not necessary in order to merit salvation, yet it is necessary in order to their being prepared for it. Men cannot be prepared for salvation without seeking it in such a way as has been described. This is necessary in order that they have a proper sense of their own necessities and unworthiness, and in order that they be prepared and disposed to prize salvation when bestowed, and be properly thankful to God for it. The requisition of so great a work in order to our salvation is no way inconsistent with the freedom of the offer of salvation, as after all it is both offered and bestowed without any respect to our work, as a price or meritorious cause of our salvation, as I have already explained. Besides, salvation bestowed in this way is better for us, more for our advantage and happiness both in this and the future world, than if it were given without this requisition. 2. Proposition. This work or business, which must be done in order to the salvation of men, is a great undertaking. It often appears so to men upon whom it is urged, utterly to break off from all their sins and to give up themselves forever to the business of religion, without making a reserve of any one lust, submitting to and complying with every command of God, in all cases, and persevering therein, appears to many so great a thing that they are in vain urged to undertake it. In so doing, it seems to them that they should give up themselves to a perpetual bondage. The greater part of men, therefore, choose to put it off and keep it at a great distance as they can. They cannot bear to think of entering immediately on such a hard service, and rather than do it, they will run the risk of eternal damnation by putting it off to an uncertain future opportunity. Although the business of religion is far from really being as it appears to such men, or the devil will be sure, if he can, to represent it in false colors to sinners, and make it appear as black and as terrible as he can, yet it is indeed a great business, a great undertaking, and it is fit that all who are urged to it should count the cost beforehand, and be sensible of the difficulty attending it. For though the devil discourages many from his undertaking by representing it to be more difficult than it really is, yet with others he takes a contrary course and flatters them it is a very easy thing, a trivial business which may be done at any time when they please, and so emboldens them to defer it from their consideration. But let none conceive any other notion of that business of religion, which is absolutely necessary to their salvation, then that it is a great undertaking. It is so on the following accounts. 1. It is a business of great labor and care. There are many commands to be obeyed, many duties to be done, duties to God, duties to our neighbor, and duties to ourselves. There is much opposition in the way of these duties from without. There is a subtle and powerful adversary laying all manner of blocks in the way. There are innumerable temptations of Satan to be resisted and repelled. There is great opposition from the world, innumerable snares laid on every side, many rocks and mountains to be passed over, many streams to be passed through, and many flatteries and enticements from a vain world to be resisted. There is a great opposition from within, a dull and sluggish heart, which is exceedingly adverse from that activity in religion which is necessary, a carnal heart, which is adverse from religion and spiritual exercises, and continually drawing the contrary way, and a proud and a deceitful heart, in which corruption will be exerting itself in all manner of ways, so that nothing can be done to any effect without a most strict and careful watch, great labor and strife. 2. It is a constant in business. In that business which requires great labor, men love now and then to have a space of relaxation, that they may rest from their extraordinary labor. But this is a business which must be followed every day. Luke 9, verses 23. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. We must never give ourselves any relaxation from this business. It must be continually prosecuted day after day. If sometimes we make a great stir and bustle concerning religion, but then lay all aside to take our ease, and do so from time to time, it will be of no good effect. We had even as good do nothing at all. The business of religion so followed, it never like to come to any good issue, nor is the work ever like to be accomplished to any good purpose. 3. It is a great undertaking, as it is an undertaking of great expense. We must therein sell all. We must follow this business at the expense of all our unlawful pleasures and delights, at the expense of our carnal ease, often at the expense of our substance, of our credit among men, the goodwill of our neighbors, at the expense of all our earthly friends, and even at the expense of life itself. Herein it is like Noah's undertaking to build the ark, which, as has been shown, was a costly undertaking. It was expensive to his reputation among men, exposing him to be the continual laughingstock of all his neighbors and of the whole world. And it was expensive to his estate, and probably cost him all that he had. 4. Sometimes the fear, trouble, and exercise of mind, which are undergone respecting this business and the salvation of the soul, are great and long continued before any comfort is obtained. Sometimes persons in this situation labor long in the dark, and sometimes, as it were, in the very fire, they have in great distress of conscience, great fears, and many perplexing temptations, before they obtain light and comfort to make their care and labor more easy to them. They sometimes earnestly and for a long time seek comfort, but find it not, because they seek it not in a right manner, nor in the right objects. God therefore hides his face. They cry, but God does not answer their prayers. They strive, but all seems in vain. They seem to themselves not at all to get forward or nearer to a deliverance from sin, but to go backward rather than forward. They see no glimmering of light. Things rather appear darker and darker, insomuch that they are often ready to be discouraged and to sink under the weight of their present distress and under the prospect of future misery. In this situation, and under these views, some are almost driven to despair. Many, after they have attained some saving comfort, are again involved in darkness and trouble. It is with them as it was with the Christian Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 32. After ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions. Some thought a melancholy habit and distemper of body, together with Satan's temptations, spend a great part of their lives in distress and darkness, even after they have had some saving comfort. 5. It is a business which, by reason of the many difficulties, snares, and dangers that attend it, requires much instruction, consideration, and counsel. There is no business wherein man stand in need of counsel more than in this. It is a difficult undertaking, a hard manner to proceed aright in it. There are 10,000 wrong ways which men may take. There are many labyrinths wherein many poor souls are entangled and never find the way out. There are many rocks on which thousands of souls have suffered shipwreck for a want of having steered aright. Men of themselves know not how to proceed in this business, any more than the children of Israel in the wilderness knew where to go without the guidance of the pillar of cloud and fire. There is a great need that they search the Scriptures and give diligent heed to the instructions and directions contained in them, as to a light shining in the dark place, and they ask counsel of those skilled in these matters. And there is no business in which men have so much need of seeking to God by prayer for His counsel, and that He would lead them in the right way and show them the straight gate. For straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Yea, there are none that find it without direction from heaven. The building of the ark was a work of great difficulty on this account, that Noah's wisdom was not sufficient to direct him how to make such a building, and should be a sufficient security against such a flood, and which should be a convenient dwelling place for himself, his family, and all the various kinds of beasts and birds, and creeping things. Nor could he ever have known how to construct this building, had not God directed him. 6. This business never ends till life ends. They that undertake this laborious, careful, expensive, self-denying business must not expect to rest from their labors till death shall have put an end to them. The long continuance of the work which Noah undertook was what especially made it a great undertaking. This also was what made the travel of the children of Israel through the wilderness appear so great to them, that it was continued for so long a time. Their spirits failed. They were discouraged, and had not a heart to go through with so great an undertaking. But such is this business that it runs parallel with life, whether it be longer or shorter. Although we should live to a great age, our race and warfare will not be finished till death shall come. We must not expect that an end will be put to our labor, and care, and strife, by any hope of a good estate which we may obtain. Past attainments and past success will not excuse us from what remains for the future, nor will they make future constant labor and care unnecessary to our salvation.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying His word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew.